Hi, I'm Lise Wheel, and this is Wheel of Justice. I have back in the studio with me Bruce Parquette, and of course you remember him as Cal Harris's defense lawyer for the third trial, where there was actually a mistrial declared. And Bruce, that was the best that Cal got, right?
Well, it was certainly better than the first two trials where he was wrongly convicted. So we were happy that he went home with his family. He got to see his second daughter graduate from high school and then send three of his kids off to college this year.
That sounds very happy, but we know that it's not all happy because just a little while ago, the court in Schoharie decided that there will be a fourth trial to start in March 2nd of 2016. Now, why do you think the prosecutors went for that fourth trial?
I actually don't want to be flippant about it, but I really do think that the law enforcement community in Tioga is a bit like Ahab and Moby Dick. It's simply an obsession at this point in time, and they have not only blinders but blindfolds on. They are simply pursuing Cal in complete disregard to other evidence that surfaced and to basic common sense and simple justice.
Well, we were talking just a moment ago about other jurors speaking from the third trial. What did they say, and what have you heard?
Well, we spoke to a few of them, and the split was amazingly even.
It six,
was
6-6.
6-6 right. For most of the time. It varied 7-5 one way or the other, depending on a couple of people flipped. But the core who were for conviction and the core who were for an acquittal never moved. And one of the jurors that we spoke to, I'm not going to name him, but he knows who he is, said to me, "Bruce, you didn't need to worry. We were the core of us, we were never going to convict Cal. We knew there wasn't enough evidence."
Why?
I think that the more objective jurors who looked at just the evidence could see that he simply could not have done this. It doesn't make any sense. There's no evidence of it. And I think the other jurors probably had more of a sense of a kind of a feeling or an intuition that something's wrong here and he didn't seem like a nice guy and he was portrayed badly and who else could have done this. And so that's some of the things that we're going to work on for the next trial.
Next trial. Will your strategy change at all?
Of course, a little bit, right? We did better than the first two trials by a lot, convinced six people that Cal is innocent. And the goal is to convince six more. We want to get 12. We want to end this. So it certainly will change. We'll do some things differently. We're continuing to investigate the case. We've actually gotten a few more leads. One of the witnesses who came forward in the third trial was actually threatened by one of the people that we were involved with.
Tell us more.
I don't want to say too much more than that, but one of the witnesses, she knows who she is, got a visit from two people that said they came from one of the two people we think were involved and threatened her not to come forward again.
And you say one of the two people, are you talking about either Stacey Stewart or Chris Thomason?
Yes.
Tell us about them.
Those are two individuals that were up in New York working at a place called Volcraft from Texas is where they were from. And they lived up here. Stacey Stewart actually bought a piece of property, lived there for a short time. And then very soon after Michelle disappeared, he took off back to Texas, abandoned the home he had purchased. And they're both in prison now. Stacey is a prison guard, and Mr. Thomason is an guest of the Department of Corrections. Yes.
Okay. So is there going to be new information coming out in this trial that you're going to hope to get through this judge? Because that's, of course, an issue whether you get that evidence in.
The judge has kind of erected an extremely high wall for us to introduce evidence that Thomason and Stewart were involved. We think we met it. One of the key pieces of evidence that we had was eyewitness testimony that the day after Michelle disappeared, they were burning bloody clothing in Stewart's burn pit in his yard up in rural Tioga.
And your thought is a bloody clothing?
Nobody burns bloody clothing unless you're trying to conceal a crime. I mean, one of the individuals that we spoke to who spoke to, I think, Thomason, said that Thomason claimed it was deer blood that they were burning. And the person during that conversation said, "Why would you burn the clothing? Wash it, throw it away. Why burn
it?" There's no crime there in hunting deer.
Right. And it was not deer season. And we actually have Stacey Stewart on tape saying to me, there was no deer. Nobody was hunting deer that day.
But didn't say what they were hunting.
Didn't say where the blood came from. He said that Thomason showed up and was covered in blood and burned the clothing, his clothing and his, quote, girlfriend's clothing. Really what happened, we think, is that Stewart and Thomason burned their own clothing. Stewart knew that we had learned about this from various sources and tried to indicate that it was only Thomason and a third party who burned the clothing, when in fact it was Thomason and Stewart.
I want to go back to the Moby analogy and Ahab. In total, the county has spent about $150,000prosecuting this so far.
That's ridiculously low.
Oh, that's low? My number is low? I thought that was high.
There's no way that they've only spent $150,000.
That's what we found on the record.
It sounds like the government running numbers again, because that's what they claim they've spent.
Which seemed high to me.
It's more than that. They said they spent $60,000 on the third trial.
Correct.
They were up in Tioga with hotel rooms for 4 months. Mm. The transcript cost to us was more than $60,000. Maybe they got a little bit of a government discount. You count overtime, the time that the DA sat in that courtroom and wasn't prosecuting any other cases, the time that the state police were there. They had two or three state police officers, senior investigators, sitting in that building every day for 5 months. You add up that, coupled with the witness fees and all the other investigative work, $100,000 doesn't come close to what they spent just on the third trial.
So, again, my question is, why? Why then this fourth trial?
Look, in its best light for them, they really believe that Cal committed this crime and are pursuing justice.
They want justice, exactly.
In the worst light, it really is just an obsession and an inability to admit error.
We're not talking about the same prosecutor. We're talking about a common thread of the same prosecutor for all these now going on fourth trials.
In some ways, worse than that. The prosecutor who now has the case has to appear in front of Gerald Keene every day. The prosecutor in the first two trials is now the judge in Tioga. So if Kirk Martin wants to not alienate the man that he has to appear in front of and rules in all his cases, he's got to follow through with this. And he has done it. He has been absolutely blind to anything that we've introduced to him. It really is odd to see the momentum carry from prosecutor to prosecutor here. We know why, in part because Gerald Keene is presiding over all his other cases.
So it's political.
It's very political. And the police officers that are involved, some of them have pursued this man for 14 and a half years. Anybody who is familiar with human nature knows that once you stake out a public position and assert it over and over again, it becomes very difficult to admit error. And you can just imagine how much more entrenched somebody would be, given the high-profile nature of this case in that county and the number of times that they've insisted that he did it. And the truth is, they haven't gathered one scintilla of evidence since 2001 that they didn't have the day after Michelle disappeared.
So in other words, you're going to present new evidence, or going to try to present new evidence, and the prosecution in your mind has nothing new to present.
They don't have any new evidence, that we know. How they present it, I'm not sure. The third trial was almost a verbatim repeat of the first two. If you look at the transcripts of the opening statements and the summations, they were at times literally verbatim. I think Kirk Martin simply read what Geraldine had said in the first two trials. Many of the witnesses simply repeated what they had said earlier. Some of the questions and answers were literally right out of the transcripts. If you had the transcript from the previous trials open while we were sitting in the courtroom, you could read and follow when you knew what was going to be said next.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get into the weeds here about some legalisms. Double jeopardy, which is, I know you're very familiar with that, but talk to the listeners about what double jeopardy means and why you were trying to prevent the fourth trial based on double jeopardy.
Well, double jeopardy is a constitutional prohibition against being tried after you've been acquitted, right? Everybody knows that if you're tried once and you're acquitted, you can't be tried again. It doesn't apply
in criminal court.
In criminal court.
You can still be tried in civil court, right? Okay.
It doesn't apply where you've been tried, convicted, and the case has been reversed for most reasons. Unless the reversal is because there was insufficient evidence at the trial, then the courts view that as the equivalent of an acquittal. What our argument is now is that the evidence in the third trial was so lacking that it was legally insufficient to submit to a jury. And if we're right about that, that would prevent a fourth trial. Procedurally in New York, it'll be difficult to get the courts to recognize that at this stage.
Right. I was going to say, you're already to the point where you've got this March 2nd trial date.
But not that so much. That because it was a mistrial on other grounds, for example, if Cal had been convicted after the third trial and the appellate courts agreed with us, it would have prevented a fourth trial. The conviction would have been reversed, and that would have been the end of it. If he's convicted at the fourth trial, the appeal can include an argument that the third trial lacks sufficient evidence to submit to a jury, and therefore the fourth trial should never have taken place. And regardless of the evidence of the fourth trial, the conviction will be reversed and the case will end. What we're trying to do is have the court say, There was not sufficient evidence in the third trial to submit to a jury. He should have been exonerated then, and we're not going to allow him to be subjected to a fourth trial.
But that seems like a losing argument at this point.
I don't know if it's losing. It is procedurally going to be difficult. I recognize
that's that lawyer talk for you're losing.
It's lawyer talk for procedurally it's going to be difficult. I wouldn't file it. It takes a lot of time for us to do this. We wouldn't file it unless we thought we had a chance at preventing it. So we're going to file it. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of time doing appellate briefs and going through the courts like this, whether it gets to the appeal. The first thing we have to do, obviously, is submit it to the trial court.
Mm-hmm. But Cal Harris has been painted as this multimillionaire with all these different car shops and organizations and sales. He's got money to burn, doesn't he?
He's a millionaire the same way I'm a football player.
Right? Yeah, you could be a football player.
I could have been some point in my youth. I'm no longer. And Cal's millions have long since been drained from him by these prosecutions. He has spent 15 years defending this false allegation. Hasn't owned a car dealership, I think, since 2006. Is struggling to survive, struggling to put his kids through school. And to call him a millionaire is really an error.
What are your thoughts on the trial staying in Schoharie? We've been there. We'll be covering the trial in March. What do you think about Schoharie and how they were treated?
We love Schoharie, and they treated us very well. It's a small community. Kind of everybody in town gets to know everybody pretty quickly. I could tell you the food places that are great.
The hot dog guy.
The hot dog guy.
Mike Veristro, I think is the last name, right?
The country cafe across the street. Give a shout out to the Carrot Barn and the Apple Barrel, I think, down the street. So there's some good food, good people. We thought that the community embraced us, and we're happy with the venue. We'll see. Hopefully we get 12 people who can be fair and impartial. If we get 12 people who can be fair and impartial and get a fair shot at presenting our evidence, I'm pretty confident about the result.
Well, we'll all be in Schoharie starting March 2nd, and we'll try out Mike's Big Dogs hot dogs and all the other places there, and we'll be watching you, Bruce Parquette. Thank you so much for being with us today on Wheel of Justice. Anything else you want to say?
Happy to do it. I'm looking forward to what comes next, and it's hopefully at some point we'll be on, and Cal will come in with me and can talk about his exoneration. And
you'll come on Wheel of Justice with Cal. Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm holding you to that.
You can count on it. He'll bring him down to New York City. He'll be happy to do it. And what we really would like to see, and I don't want to make light of this, and obviously it's not, our goal is to find out what happened to Michelle Harris.
Mm-hmm.
We've worked very hard, in part, to exonerate Cal. I mean, that's our job. But really the reason why Cal hired us, and he said this to me at the beginning of when he first came into my office, I'm an open book. Anything you need, tell me, and you have it. Any question you want answered, any piece of evidence, any item, any document, tell us. I want to know what happened to the mother of my children. And I think he said this publicly, that he has to affirmatively prove his innocence, mm-hmm. not just to eliminate the legal trouble, but to eliminate any doubt in his children's
mind,
or in the future that he was involved in this. And he has been a man of his word. I have not asked him a question that he hasn't answered. I have not asked him for a piece of evidence or access to anything that he hasn't granted. And ultimately, we spend a lot of money and a lot of time looking for what really happened to her. And my real hope is that not only do we find out who was involved and who did this, but I really want to find her.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing, finding Michelle. She and her family are entitled to a real funeral, a real grave, and that's my goal. I really wish the police would join in the effort to do that. I can tell you a couple of the individuals involved from law enforcement, some still on the job and some retired, kind of hinted that they're not so thrilled with this case any longer. It was actually an interesting little byproduct of the trial. You get to know people pretty mm-hmm. well as you sit and you talk to them every day or over the course of some time. So I'm hopeful. I'm not foolish, but I'm hopeful that maybe somebody in the law enforcement community will take an interest in this and really do the job that needs to be done, because our ability to investigate this is limited. We don't have dozens of investigators, forensic labs. I can't compel people to testify. I can't make them talk to us. But I'm hopeful that someone in law enforcement will. And that with the information we have and with some help from police and some honest investigators and thorough, that we actually will get to the bottom of this. Because she is somewhere. Something happened to her. And someone knows what happened to her. And I think that we are correct in our assertions about who was involved.
You've been listening to Bruce Barquette, Cal Harris's defense lawyer in the third and now the fourth upcoming trial on March 2nd, 2016. I'm Lise Wheel for Wheel of Justice. Till next time.